Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI expresses his sorrow and praise for those involved in a tragedy this weekend in Germany, in which 19 people were killed and many more injured. The chairman of the Zimbabwe Conservation Trust speaks of the devastation of wildlife in his country and of the loss of endangered species of animals, of ecosystems, and of national identity. And Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright reflects on the many aspects of the biblical story of the prophet Elijah. Pope Benedict XVI expressed his sorrow over a tragedy on Saturday in Germany, where 19 people were killed at a techno music festival that erupted into a panicked stampede. After praying the Midday Angelus on Sunday, the Pope spoke of the tragedy and prayed for those killed and injured during the traditional Love Parade, which was held this year in Duisburg. Lydia O'Kane reports.
Unserem barmherzigen himmlischen Vater vertraue ich heute besonders die jungen Menschen an, die gestern in Duisburg auf tragische Weise ums Leben gekommen sind.
Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday expressed his deep sorrow over the deaths of young people in his native Germany who were attending an annual music festival. The Holy Father spoke of the tragic loss of young lives and said he was praying for all those who were crushed during a panicked stampede at the Duisburg event on Saturday evening. Hundreds of people were also injured in the crush in an overcrowded tunnel that served as the sole entrance to the festival, and the Pope added that he was praying for them and for the families of all the victims at this time of great suffering. The Pope was speaking on Sunday during his Angelus address at the papal summer residence of Castel Gandolfo, where he also went on to stress the importance of the Lord's Prayer.
In today's Gospel, Jesus teaches us the Lord's Prayer. Following Christ's own example, I encourage you to pray for the grace, always to be worthy sons and daughters of our Father in heaven, and loving brothers and sisters to each other.
Pope Benedict also noted that we are facing the words of Scripture that we learn as children, words that are imprinted in our memory, that shape our lives, accompanying us to the last breath. Being young, the Pope added, becomes the equivalent of following Christ. Every time we recite the Our Father, our voice is intertwined with that of the Church, and those who pray are never alone. Finally, the Holy Father, who is officially on his summer holidays, reminded the estimated 3,000 pilgrims gathered that Sunday, the 25th of July, was the feast day of the Apostle James, patron saint of Santiago de Compostela, who the Pope recounted left his father and his job as a fisherman to follow Jesus.
Precisamente in este domingo, si celebra también la fiesta del apóstol Santiago.
The Pope also dedicated a special thought to the pilgrims who have travelled in great numbers to Santiago and said he hoped to join the faithful at this Spanish shrine as part of a visit to Barcelona in November. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Thanks there to Lydia O'Kane for that report. Wildlife has been nearly wiped out on Zimbabwe's former private game ranches in the 10 years since the government there began seizing and dividing the areas into small plots. According to the Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force, some 90% of animals have been lost since 2000, while the country has seen an estimated 60% of its total wildlife killed off to help ease massive economic woes. Now, I know you're aware my focus is often on Zimbabwe and on the dramatic predicament of its impoverished inhabitants that suffer, amongst other things, political intimidation and total lack of press freedom. But this is the first time I have given all of my attention to the state of the nation's natural patrimony, its nature and its once plentiful wildlife. To do so, I telephoned someone who has dedicated a lifetime of work and has put his own safety at risk to try and save the animals that are left and raise awareness as to the dramatic situation of wildlife conservation in his country.
My name is Johnny Rodriguez. I'm the chairman of the Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force. The organization was formed in 2000 because of the amount of poaching that was happening in the river systems. I represented the country for 5 years fishing, and one thing led to the other, and then as the land reform came in, more and more of the game ranchers and the people that had wildlife were seeking help, and one thing led to the other, and that's where we are today.
Johnny, now Zimbabwe is in the news, not as often as it should be as far as I'm concerned, because of the pretty desperate human rights situation there, but conservation as such is never really mentioned. Why is it important to keep awareness high as regards to the importance of the natural patrimony of a country like Zimbabwe?
Well, for one, your wildlife, your environmental issues, you need that in the ecosystem. That's the first thing. And secondly, it's one of the biggest foreign currency earners for a country like this, where everything has collapsed. You need tourism and you need the wildlife. We have to preserve them so that at least we can actually show the world the beauty and the animals in its own habitat and not in a zoo, where it's cruel. And because of that, we've got the responsibility of actually trying to look after them and not abuse it, so that there is something left for the future generation.
Not only for the future generation, but maybe also for local Zimbabweans who have much to gain if their wildlife is preserved as it should be.
Well, the thing is, because of the turmoil, there's no law and order in this country. I mean, the law only works on the one political side. There's bigger issues. The economy has collapsed. The authorities, the guardians, haven't got money. They're shooting a lot of their animals to feed the army, the police, the air force, and themselves. And then we've got the bushmeat market. You've got the commercial hunting that goes on, which is not ethical. There's a lot of problems, and there's not enough funds to actually do the preservation of these animals.
Johnny reels off the issues with nonchalance. They are obviously everyday problems to him. The fact that there is no law and order in the country, the economic collapse, the hunger and the necessity to shoot wild animals to feed the army or the family. But then he also mentions the bushmeat market with its indiscriminate and cruel killings, and the unethical commercial hunting, which decimates wildlife populations, including many endangered species, as well as destroying the ecosystem.
Would you say that most poaching is for eating because the people are hungry, or is it to commerce in skins and tusks and whatever?
Well, you can understand if the people live in the surrounding areas, they're not getting any benefits. And the biggest problem we've got is the actual authorities. We just managed to stop animals being exported to Korea because of the world opinion and a lot of the conservation groups that lobbied, and we managed to get the animals released. That's one of the stories. They try and make money as much as they can because there's nothing being produced and sent out.
Here, Johnny is referring to a recent episode which was reported by the international media, revealing that Zimbabwe's government had agreed to sell giraffes, zebras, baby elephants and other wild animals to be displayed to the North Korean public in a zoo.
The bigger issue, you can understand when a person loses the surrounding areas of a wildlife, they have to feed the families. That it doesn't do that much damage. But where the damage is coming in is when the authorities say, we've got an abundance of this, and they start killing, and to try and keep the military and the police force on their side, they have to shoot the animals and feed them meat because the cattle industry has collapsed too.
I've read that a lot of game ranchers have lost between 80 and 90% of their wildlife to poachers. And also with a lot of disregard for endangered species. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. I mean, before the land reform back in 1995, we had 640 game ranches. We had about 15 conservancies. We're busy at the moment trying to save the one of the last ones that we've got, which is being invaded. And, you know, out of the 640, we've got none left. The game is 100% been destroyed or eaten, poached out. And it's serious problems, it really is. And since then, now the state land, where it's reserved for parks and all, what more is where they're taking a hell of a punishment at the moment, and we're losing a lot of game.
Surely it must be pretty evident that the tourism industry is also vanishing, I imagine, in Zimbabwe. I mean, if there's no more wildlife to see, who is coming to Zimbabwe's national parks on say, photographic safaris?
Well, there's still a few, not much. You know, we need more. And the thing is, if they don't put a stop and enforce the laws that is there to preserve the wildlife, then we've got no chance at all. But if they do enforce the laws and have stiff penalties for any corrupt person or any person that's actually doing the destruction, then we've got a chance. And, you know, anything to preserve wildlife, you need the funds. And without tourism, we're in deep water.
What about since the swearing-in of the new, shall we call it, unity government? Have you had any kind of support from the opposition?
You know, most of our wildlife areas are being encroached by promises made by government. And the government of national unity are trying to resolve the political issue. A lot of people say it's a government of national unity. I call it a government of national disaster.
What shall we do?
What Johnny is pointing out very clearly is that harmony cannot be achieved without unison. Things go hand in hand, and when a nation suffers, everyone in that nation suffers, right down to the very last little dung beetle toiling its way through a degraded environment.
Do you think it's important that the world opinion understands that, yes, humans do come first, but so does the overall situation of a nation and its natural heritage?
Yeah, you see, the thing is, you know, the humans have got rights. There's a lot of people lobbying for animal rights where you can utilize the natural resources in a sustainable manner, that there is something there where it's not happening at the moment. I mean, you know, it's really hard when you see the atrocities and the inhumane things that are actually happening, where animals are being snared and taking anything from 3 to 5 days to die. And then nobody is actually collecting that meat to feed the undernourished or the poorer people. So, you know, there's a lot of problems.
Do you have hope for the future?
Yes, I do. I look at it, you know, if it was, say, 7 years ago, I didn't have any hope. But I do see a bit of a light in the tunnel, and especially now with a lot of the conservation groups and people are trying to find solutions. I mean, the solution is that we have to go back to the grassroots, educate the people and show them the right way of actually looking after their own resources. Then we've got a good chance. And I'm very positive that it's going to happen. It's just the time, and time is not with us.
The world did hear about Mugabe's plan to sell all those animals to the North Korean zoo. And thanks to your lobbying, thanks to the voice of many conservationists, that plan didn't come through. Is that quite a big victory for you?
Well, it is. It's the biggest victory we've had. And now we're trying to get now them to commit and give us a document to actually state that they won't export any more animals out of Zimbabwe, and we should actually try and preserve. We've got a new guy that's come in, Chadenga, which is actually doing a lot of the good things. So let's see. You know, we have to be positive about this. I believe we can do it. And if everybody unites and talk with the same voice, and we do the walk and do the talk, or do the talk with the walk, then we know we've got a good chance of actually preserving and getting the country back to normality.
So would you encourage people to come to Zimbabwe, let's say, for a holiday?
Yes, there's still a few beautiful places. You know, we've got some of the seven wonders in the world. Because of all the logging and all the exposure that we've done, we still have not an abundance of animals, but there is some of the beauty still there. And I do recommend to tourists to come in. I mean, that's one way that will help us actually save these animals, where they won't have the excuses to say, look, we haven't got tourism, so let's kill these animals, because then we can feed the people. And if money is being generated through tourism, so be it. I think that way it stops a lot of the poaching, and a lot of the things will be in the public eye, and that is the right way to do it.
And it will be a boost for the country as a whole as well.
Yes, yes. You know, I'm not a politician, so the thing is, you know, I leave the politicians in their own little camp. The rest of us, the Zimbabweans, the conservation groups, are not involved in politics. All we want to do is the right thing and do the right thing.
When you said we have one of the seven wonders of the world, you're referring to the Victoria Falls, aren't you?
Yeah, Victoria Falls, we've got the Zimbabwean ruins. You know, this country is very unique because there's six regions in it. And you go from one country, it's like Sinai Desert, and you go to the other side of the country, it's like the Eastern Highlands and Scotland. So, you know, there's so much to see in a small country like us. The beauty is there. We've got the Kariba Dam. We've got the Zambezi, which has got one of the only type of species in the world, the Zambezi tigerfish. There's so many things, and there's a lot of the endangered species of animals here. The bird life is beautiful. So, yes, I do recommend tourists to come here.
So if you're looking for a holiday destination, why not take Zimbabwe into consideration? It truly is a beautiful country and in dire need of all the support it can get. And don't hesitate to contact Johnny Rodriguez, as he himself suggests. He will answer any query and come up with useful suggestions. He can easily be reached through the webpage of the Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force. And now, on a more reflective note, my friend, Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright, explains that there are ways of listening to stories of the Bible that can bring encouragement, affirmation, and renew our sense of the vision of the future. I went to see Father Timothy just the other day, as he was preparing for an intense summer of work in Benedictine communities across the globe, to which he travels every year. He said he'd like to talk to me about one of his favourite Bible stories, the story of the prophet Elijah, the second part of which we will listen to next week.
When a community faces criticism, a certain amount of anger among its members from outside, a deliberate attempt even to destabilise, even to destroy, the natural reaction is to become defensive, to propose counter-arguments, to point to history, to point to values, etc. That is not always the best way to react to criticism. Why? Because once you get into an argument, there always has to be a counter-argument, and so the battle goes on. And in a battle of words, there'll be no winners. Why? Simply because in a world with so many different points of view circulating, articulated, researched, there can't be any winners. So what should we do? I would like to suggest that we need to take a deep breath and go into silence. We need to go into silence with our Bible and listen in our reading. Yes, there are ways of listening to the stories of the Bible which can bring encouragement, affirmation, and renew our sense of the vision for the future. Let me illustrate. Perhaps, for me, one of my favourites in the Bible is the story of the prophet Elijah, it just happens we've been reading during the Eucharist over the last few weeks. It's an astonishing story of a powerful king determined to get his own way with a very powerful wife, Ahab and Jezebel, for those of you who remember the story. And into this God's man, if I can call Elijah, is suddenly told that the only way God is going to bring sense to Ahab is if he proclaims drought. Well, that is a ridiculous thing to say, really, because when has any man ever been able to say to the clouds, stop raining? But that's precisely what Elijah did, on the orders of God, and so started a drought. Elijah was then asked by God to move out of what we now call the West Bank and cross over to the other side of the Jordan and hide in a cave on his own, where he was fed by birds bringing him some food. All sounds rather fanciful. But there was a stream near his cave, and he just had to go there. There was no question of how long he was going to stay there. He was no question of whether the next meal was going to arrive. There was no question of when is the stream going to dry up. He just went there. And then the stream did dry up, and he was sent off to a place called Zarephath. Now, this little story, up even so far, has presented us with a very important fundamental truth of faith. Ultimately, our world is created. That is, it came into being by the will of God. That is a foundation of Christian faith. Therefore, Elijah's presence in the cave was a way of expressing that the situation in which he lived, he was totally dependent on God. He didn't cultivate his own food. He didn't have any stores with him. He just was there in the cave. And what was going through his mind? The memory of God. Remembering that God, active and was aware and knew. So, when the next phase happened, he was ready to respond. That moment in the cave was, if you like, step one in a retreat. Going somewhere to reflect on the fundamental. However career-orientated I am, however family-orientated I am, ultimately my life is in the hands of God. And ultimately, of course, I can manipulate it, I can take decisions, I can move it this way and move it that way. But there are a lot of things I can't control. Talk to anyone who was in the Haiti earthquake. So he then is asked to go towards a place called Sidon. and he meets up with this woman on the way. And what does he do? Can I have some food? He says, I'm starving. And the woman says to him, well, I haven't got any. I'm just collecting some sticks to light a fire in order to prepare a last meal for myself and my son. But Elijah persists. I will come and eat with you. And because that woman welcomed him, he was able to work the miracle of providing food. What was the transforming effect was not the demand of Elijah, but the innate sense of hospitality of that woman. And our second point of our reflection then is not only that everything depends on God, but if we really want to communicate God with each other, we have to be open to each other. And we have to learn, not just in our social meetings and our community living, but also in the silence of our retreat, that other people are important, that hospitality is a way of recognizing God in our neighbor, whoever that neighbor is.
You've been listening to Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright, who will be bringing you the second part of that talk next Monday at the same time. That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.